broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, Happy Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Let's start the week by going up front to get the latest on Wisconsin politics statewide with Channel 12 political director Matt Smith on Point Taken.
That's all the introductions. Welcome to the Monday program. Point Taken, Steve Kristen and Matt Smith. And the big headline, boy, we all woke up to it this morning. At least I did.
I did too.
Sarah Rodriguez, one of the front runners in the race for the Democratic nomination for governor. Major problems with her campaign funding, campaign manager. What do you know? What's the latest?
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I didn't get to that part.
Yeah. Well, first, there's a lot we don't know. So the campaign late last night, what was it, 9:30, 9:45, put out a press release saying that the Sarah Rodriguez campaign fired its campaign manager immediately over some major concerns, mismanagement, and inaccuracy in campaign finance reports. So
because we were talking before the show, as far as this campaign managers get fired all the time.
Yeah.
What is the significance of releasing a press, like having a press release announcing the departure of a campaign manager?
It's very significant, right?
Because that part usually doesn't happen.
Because candidates go through campaign staff routinely, right? Like for a campaign manager to be fired is not unusual. To put out a press release Sunday, 3 days before the next filing period, and how many weeks until the primary as early voting is underway, is very significant.
Less than 30 days?
Yeah. So we don't know the extent of everything that happened. We don't even know for confirmation yet if this has to do with the upcoming report or the report that was filed in January.
Have you heard that there's some issues with the previous filing?
Yeah, we do know that it appears there's some duplicate entries in the January report. So, like, if you had a name and a $10,000 donation, it appears some of those appeared multiple times in the January report. So whether it is just that or whether there is more that we don't know, nonetheless, this is significant. And, I mean, Kristen, I'm sure you know everyone in Democratic circles is talking about it last night into this morning.
I woke up nonstop. Many texts about this. But I think it's one of which was, I think the exact text was hot take. This shows decisiveness and leadership as far as how quickly it was decided to fire the campaign manager and to have the transparency to talk about it. Do either of you agree with that statement?
I do, if that's what this is, if it was a campaign manager acting alone or made an illegal entry or whatever the circumstances are, we may know more later today or this week. I think that that does show decisiveness. And clearly, she had to get in front of this thing because if this lingers, it keeps other candidates in the race, which makes it harder.
That's the next question. As far as if this is going back to the January finance report, is there issues with the campaign as far as, I don't want to go so far as like fraud, but if you submit something that has that many inaccuracies, what is the consequence of that?
So let me just read a couple phrases from the press release because I think it goes to your exact question. That they fired after discovering serious mismanagement and inaccuracies in campaign finance filings. The campaign will be in contact with the Wisconsin's Ethics Commission first thing Monday morning to ensure the inaccuracies are corrected.
Well, I mean, that's the process, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what the Ethics Commission does with that, we've asked the campaign, I've asked the campaign a series of questions, whether they believe anything was criminal, how long they've known about this, and I anticipate we will learn more from the Rodriguez campaign in the coming hours.
What have we heard from the four other candidates?
Joel Brennan just put out a press release. One of the five candidates still in. The title of his release is Five Critical Questions Sarah Rodriguez Needs to Answer. So I can imagine the other Democratic candidates are going to fully capitalize on this, right? I mean, we are just a couple days ahead of the filing period, especially if you are a Kel DeRoy's or a Joel Brennan and there was chatter about, are you going to stay in? Are you going to get out?
Yeah.
This could mobilize them, right? This could give them a little energy headed into the final shot of the campaign. If you're Francesca Hong, if you're Mandela Barnes, and you're in that mix of the top three, it's going to be fascinating to see how they respond and how serious of an issue this is for the Rodriguez campaign. We just don't know the scope yet.
Well, and also because how much does this potentially hurt a general campaign if Rodriguez were to win the primary? Does this become a huge flag for a Republican, the Tom Tiffany campaign to go after Sarah Rodriguez and leadership skills, decisiveness, management, et cetera. And it becomes a huge stain for her going forward.
I think the Tiffany campaign already has capitalized in social media posts in terms of like, wow, this is how you're going to manage your campaign type questions. So like that is already happening and will continue to happen. I think the larger question in these final days of the primary, is there a money problem? And we just don't know the answer to that. Yeah. But is there an actual money problem for the campaign that could impact advertising, that could impact all of the things the campaign would need to do in the final stretch?
Because where did she come in at the when the last finance reports came in as far as the stacked order of who had raised? Because Crowley had raised the most.
But yeah. She was second, no?
I think she, she had about 618,000. So I believe that put her second.
And so, which, you know, as far as optics go.
Yeah.
Coming out of that finance report put her as a front, maybe it was one of the reasons why she's now a front runner. And so if it's a significant amount less than what she actually did raise, or what she actually raised is a significant amount less, does that change the calculus of why she is where she is as far as when we think of who the front runners are?
You asked the leadership question before. Not that I'm in the habit of giving Democrats advice, especially these candidates, but I would say if she really wants to distance herself or make sure that this is about my campaign manager, not about my campaign or the candidate, Sarah Rodriguez, we have to hear from Sarah Rodriguez as soon as possible. If it lingers, if it drags out, we don't know the answers to these questions, it's not a good look. And that would, I think, impact people's decision because they have choices here.
And when you say hear from her, do you mean like a press conference where she takes questions or just another press release?
No,
I think so too, as far as actually being able to like handle questions.
Yes, show what you got. Show the leadership. Live on camera, answer the tough questions. That could be a win moment for her if she's right and it's not her and it's her campaign manager. And two, this is what I did when I found out something. Boom. Now, the problem is some of this stuff may have been dated. Why now? Why did it take so long? Again, she might have just found out or the campaign might have just found out. And maybe it has to do with this upcoming filing. Maybe that's when they notice there was a discrepancy. It's an amazing story, sort of swirling in the race. We have five candidates, and I think to your point, two of them might have been considering dropping out. Why would you drop out now when everything's up in the air? Fun times in Wisconsin.
A primary October surprise.
Yeah, less than 30 days, as you said on Upfront yesterday.
And it's such a cliche, right?
Yeah, fun stuff. But maybe not for Sarah
Rodriguez.
Well,
actually, that's a good question. Do you think this is potentially that someone else found out about it and her getting in front of it? Like, this is not something they just realized.
That's speculation. I mean, who knows?
I'm not answering that question.
I mean, there are so many possibilities. And I think to Steve's point about answering questions, all this has done now, yes, we had the initial statement, but the speculation is abound. Obviously among voters and the general public, but even in Democratic circles, there is massive speculation about what this is, the scope of it, and what's going to come next.
And here's the thing. We're saying this out loud on a radio station that goes across the state. Some people are waking up hearing this morning. They may not have been aware of this as I was, because I go to bed at 9:30. So this was like when I was in bed already. So let's admit it that I'm an old man. I go to bed early. All right. We'll continue the conversation. Gwen Moore, Congresswoman, was on Upfront this weekend, and I watched the whole interview. She has some comments about the governor's race. We'll get to those after this. Point taken. Matt Smith, our guest every Monday morning. He is the political director of Channel 12 in Milwaukee, also the host of Upfront, along with Jaron Jordan. Big guest, as always. Let's start off with Representative Gwen Moore joined the program talking about the governor's race in Wisconsin. And I guess the big question you asked her, I think you or Jaron asked her, whether she would endorse. What was her answer?
Well, I was a little taken aback because previously she had said no, right? That she wasn't going to endorse. But things have changed a little bit. This was immediately, I guess, last week after David Crawley dropped out, endorsed Sarah Rodriguez. Missy Hughes did the same. So, like, Sarah Rodriguez has had some of this momentum, at least in terms of endorsements from other candidates looking to shore that up. So we posed the question to Congresswoman Moore, are you going to endorse ahead of the primary?
Let's hear from Congresswoman Gwen Moore.
So in terms of an endorsement ahead of the primary?
It's not going to happen today here, Matt, on your program.
All right.
I have been very committed to team nominee, and I think as I see, and a lot of people have stayed on the sidelines to let the people speak up. But David has sort of changed that.
Is it time
calculation
to come off the sidelines?
And so we'll see.
I mean, obviously, very politically astute. She's been around for a long time. Yeah. huge supporter of David Crowley, not as far as voting for him, but I mean, a lot of nice things to say. And I, as somebody who's not a Democrat, I've said similar things.
Has anyone ever said anything bad about David Crowley? I feel like there was an outpouring of people who had very nice things to say about him as he dropped out. I think he's well liked. I think his issues was more about a campaign that just kind of failed to launch rather than his leadership or his likability.
Maybe it's not his time. I'm going to ask you this as a journalist, and you can answer in the way you want to. What do you make of the, I'm dropping out, here's, I want you to vote for Sarah Rodriguez. What do you make of that as you watch this election? Because we've had two.
Yeah.
We may have had more, but now sort of the dynamic has changed in this race. What do you make of it?
I think there is this thought among some Democratic circles that there is concern about whether if Francesca Hong were to win the primary, if she can win statewide. Those conversations are happening among Democrats. So there has been this thought, somewhat privately, is Sarah Rodriguez more of a moderate Democrat that could appeal more statewide? So do we somehow encourage a whole slew of endorsements to come behind her to demonstrate that she should be the candidate that should run statewide and could win statewide as opposed to a Francesca Hong, who is a Democratic socialist? So I don't know if that is the impetus to all of this per se, but I know those conversations behind the scenes are happening. But it is notable that the two candidates that did drop out did endorse Sarah Rodriguez.
This is sort of a nuanced question. Somebody asked this in an email last week about, I think Chris and I were talking about the governor's race. Is it known, or have they talked about, are whatever national organization of Democratic Socialists are, that those people, those...
The DSA.
DSA. Are they advising her campaign in the state of Wisconsin? Anyone know?
I think so. Like as far as the involvement and the apparatus that they've created, especially the apparatus when you think about who was involved getting Mamdani elected, I don't know how much, but I know to a certain extent, absolutely.
That's where the context of the question came from, because they talked, the emailer talked about the mayor of New York relationship to Francesca Hong. I don't know they have a relationship.
Well, he hasn't endorsed or come here.
No. And it was interesting because a quick side note, I was listening to a news conference of his the other day, and someone asked him if he was going to start endorsing outside of New York, and he kind of brushed off the question. So whether we see the New York City mayor get involved in races like Wisconsin's governor race could be TBD,
I guess. Interesting because he's pretty good at brushing off all things that come to national politics.
Yeah.
I feel like his message discipline comes from sticking to New York and New York City and New York's issues and candidates who are running in his district of New York City.
Yeah, you wonder if a New York City mayor endorsement would actually backfire in Wisconsin. It's like, why do we need that? Why do we need this guy telling us anything? Because not everybody's a Democratic socialist that's a Democrat in Wisconsin. It's like, well, what do we need his advice for?
Yeah.
I
mean, that could be a negative. Let's take another break. We'll wrap up with Matt Smith, political director at Channel 12. In Milwaukee, thanks for joining us as always. If you miss any or all of our broadcasts, you can find us on YouTube all the time, which is a great way to do it. And it's a cool way to sample what we do. We have podcasts. We do all this stuff. WTMJ.com is also a great resource. Chris and Steve, more with Matt after this, 620 WTMJ. Matt Smith on board as always on this Monday. All right, so defund the police has been a concept, especially since George Floyd, that a lot of candidates and elected officials have thrown out there, but they all seem, Matt Smith, to be like moving away from that concept.
It was not a very popular slogan.
No.
Yeah.
I watched the show and I saw Mandela Barnes speak to it, and you had Jeffrey Norman, some commentary that you interviewed him of. Like a traditional journalist yelling questions.
Well, it was interesting. Milwaukee, the city and county unveiled they do their quarterly crime stats. So we were there and I just threw out a question to them because we've heard, right? We've heard Francesca Hong say defund the police, social media posts, right? We've heard Mandela, there's been all the questions about him during the Senate bid and all these questions about police and police funding and do you abolish police? Do you defund them? What do you do? So we asked them, what would happen if you received less funding as a police agency?
Let's hear from the police chief.
But I'm not in a position to dictate how the money's spent. All I can do is say, be careful what you ask for. And understand that we are working as best as we can collaboratively, but there still is that type of investment, which I'm very appreciative of our mayor, of making that commitment to ensure that we have the adequate resources to do the work that you're seeing.
Well, and it's interesting because from a governor's standpoint, I mean, ultimately, at least for Norman's sake, it is a municipal budget, right? As far as whatever it's at, someone at the state level is dictating. But it's also interesting as far as what, at least from my point of view, what was always not great about a defund the police slogan is when you actually dug into it, some people actually do believe that. And as far as like police as a whole is not an effective tool.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of people who understood that what they were actually asking for is more resources towards other programs that down the line lead to less crime, right? As far as like public safety being more than just police on a block and it being, you know, programs that are funded, having more resources as far as emergency resources for mental health crises and stuff that police are not always the answer for a lot of public safety options, but because ultimately a budget is a pie. And so when the police are getting a big portion of that budget, it means other programs don't get funded. But that's a lot more, that's a much longer answer to a question as far as how do budgets get allocated.
Yeah. And the question is, do you then take that money that is going to a police department and invest it in different programs? And what is the impact on that in cities and villages across the state?
I think if you learned anything from the idea, the concept of community-oriented policing, it's a lot of things. And one of those things is not to limit the local law enforcement folks.
Yeah.
They need to be funded, but there's also all these other things. And I was just reading or listening to a report about mental health and the fact that they're pulling back on funding for schools for mental. All these things matter in the equation of public safety. And a police chief, I mean, he's saying the right things here. We defunding the police. If you said that out loud in the moments, whatever moment that was in the context of a killing or whatever, it's not a good look. And it will be used against you, not in the court of law, but in the court of public opinion when it comes time for people to vote. That's the risk for candidates. If you said it out loud at any point.
Or wrote it on social media.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the risk for candidates. It's again, all these things matter. It's in the public domain. Matt Smith, we'll do it again next week.
Yeah.
Anything big on your table other than Sarah Rodriguez today?
Well, listen, we got a big week ahead, right? We have campaign finance reports. Oh, it's going to be really fascinating to see where everyone lines up. We have the Marquette poll next week.
Next week. That's what my question.
Yeah. So we have week, and then we have, apparently there's a debate in two weeks.
Yes, going?
The 28th, 7 p.m., Channel 12. You can't miss it. Matt and Jaron Jordan.
Starting to dream about it, so that's never a good sign.
You're working ahead. You're formulating your strategy. All right, Matt, we'll see you next week. A lot of us, again, waking up to news, and this actually happened over the weekend, but the passing of a U.S. Senator, always a big deal, South Carolina, Senator Lindsey Graham, avid supporter of the President of the United States, 71.
Unexpectedly. So obviously we've been on
Mitch McConnell watch.
Yeah, yeah. And the last week especially of talking about, is he alive, proof of life, which he is now subsequently given as he's holding the hostage newspaper of showing what date it is. But I woke up Sunday and I was, because Frankie wakes up at like 6:30, so Mike and I take turns of who gets to sleep in and who's hanging with Frankie.
Smart plan.
And I wasn't on my phone. And then Mike finally wakes up and, you know, typically he is scrolling through Twitter or something. So I walk in to talk to him and he goes, "How about Lindsey Graham dying?" And I go, "You mean Mitch McConnell?" Because I had not seen the news, and I just assumed, you know, I am more politically inclined than Mike is, so I just thought he got it wrong. That was my first assumption. He's like, "No, Lindsey Graham." And so, obviously, this took everyone as a huge shock, including Lindsey Graham, right? Because it sounds like it was now
just on an international trip to Ukraine.
What is it? They're saying it's an aortic...
there was a specific term.
It was basically a tear in his aorta that was, like, instantly killed him.
And they have a family history, apparently, his family, of heart issues. But he just was on an international trip.
He was just in Ukraine.
He just celebrated his 71st birthday, like 2 days before
he died.
According
to Trump, who joined, was at Meet the Press yesterday, in place of when Lindsey Graham was supposed to be on, saying that he had talked to Senator Graham at like 7 p.m. And then by 8, he had died. And so it is a shocking turn of events, especially considering Mitch McConnell still, despite the proof of life, is not returning to Senate anytime soon, as far as he's still in a rehabilitation center inside the hospital, recovering from a fall, and then it was a pneumonia as well. And so it was a surprising day, to say the least. And obviously, there's political implications now because Senator Graham was up for re-election.
Yeah,
and you know, I think most people considered that a very safe seat. And now there's going to be, at least for the time being,
temporary appointment.
A temporary appointment. and then people starting to raise their hand as far as who's going to actually run for the seat against, I think the Democratic nominee is named Annie Andrews.
That sounds right.
She's a doctor, and I have no idea without a, you know, decades long incumbent, if that changes the math for the Democrats' likelihood of that maybe adding as a toss-up state for them.
It adds another wild card to this very tenuous hold that the Republicans have. Right now it's 99 senators, right, because Lindsey Graham died. But Mitch McConnell, not a functioning senator because he's not going to vote or listen to, you know, the testimony.
So at this point it's 51-47?
Maybe
52, if you consider Fetterman a Republican.
Is it
at this
51?
Point?
No, it'd be 54. Is it 50-47?
I'm talking about currently, like, seated in the Senate right now as far as people who are voting on the floor.
Yeah. And so it's sort of another reason why much of the things that Donald Trump would like the Senate and the House to do are even more in limbo, which includes the SAVE Act.
Yeah.
And I did see that the Housing Act just went forward because the president
didn't.
It's sort of an interesting strategy. He could have vetoed it, right? And he probably got overridden, but it just was an interesting strategy by the president. I guess for me, just sort of an overall overarching look at Lindsey Graham. I never was a huge fan of him. I thought he spoke very clearly and loudly on January 6th about why that was wrong, but he quickly, you know, backtracked. And
well, he spoke very clearly and loudly in 2016 as far as how he felt about.
Yeah. Couldn't be
Trump.
More critical.
And that obviously changed as well.
So, as often happens with political figures, and certainly in the current political climate we live in, there's this rush to, because I hated him politically, I have to demonize the person. I'm not in that camp. I don't like it. I mean, I guess the term I would use is show some respect. The person's dead. His family's grieving. The state, in their own way, will grieve. And the country's grieving because the president has asked for flags to be lowered, U.S. flags. As far as his tenure and his legacy, he was part of the three guys? McCain, Lieberman, and Graham were like the three amigos. They were very tied together, and they did a lot of important work. And as you know, I'm a huge fan of John McCain, and the fact that his legacy has been tarnished by this president in some really blatantly ugly ways. I'm not going to comment on someone's private life or I'm not going to demonize them for their political positions when they just passed. I don't like it. I saw a lot of this popping up. Not that I wanted to look at it, but I had to look at it just to get a sense of it.
There was... I agree with you. I mean, I think that probably comes as a surprise to no one as far as how you and I are when it comes to... As much as I don't like this word, but it's like civility.
Yeah.
But the jokes were out, certainly, yesterday as far as people commenting on... you know, like a BOGO type deal and stuff like that, as far as talking about him and Mitch McConnell and a lot of memes. But yeah, I completely agree with you as far as it being uncouth and very disrespectful when you could just say nothing.
Yeah. If you got nothing good to say, don't say anything, right? That's the famous line that your moms or your dads always used to say. I think there's always an opportunity to be better, right? And I'm going to say it loudly. I think you just said the same thing. This is a moment to be better. You may not have liked his politics. That's the world we live in. We all, if you're on one side, you hate the other side. That's what we taught loudly and clearly on talk radio and talk TV for the last 30 years. I don't like it. Here's an example to be better than that. And if you don't like the person, grieve with his family. He died at 71. I'm almost 68.
My parents are 71.
Yeah. You don't think that comes into our brains? Reason I'm having a heart scan and before my physical is because of that very reason. You want to make sure, even though you feel great, you want to make sure you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And the fact that he went to Ukraine, he was a guy that knew the world's tensions, knew the flashpoints, and he did spend a lot of time as a senator working on international relations, which is something you should give him credit for. And the fact that he was in Ukraine means that he was looking for opportunities to maybe solve that problem, which the president, of course, said he'd solve on day one, and that has not happened. There's another issue with this, though. What we do with people that are incapacitated and how we're playing this game. Remember the House member from Texas who Speaker Mike Johnson wouldn't swear in? I think it was Texas, right? He just let that linger. He wouldn't swear in because they had the majority and they needed that little margin.
Well, technically, they were also not in session.
Yeah,
right?
But he also expanded not in session to be ridiculously long. And I would argue it's because he knows he doesn't have any real power right now. And he's sort of you know.
But this is also, this is comes from Dianne Feinstein not that many years ago, when they were just like wheeling her around as like the Walking Dead. And so when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the fact that the Senate is, that has never built the necessary rules and procedures to deal with problems when senators are incapable of serving. So let's talk a little bit more about that after this on Point Taken. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen. He is Steve. And talking about not only the untimely, unexpected death of Senator Lindsey Graham, but also obviously Mitch McConnell, who I think we can see is alive, but also not going back to the Senate floor anytime soon. And the question of what responsibility does the Senate have to actually create rules when senators can't serve?
Incapacitated.
Right? Because ultimately you are leaving your constituents without representation for your own, you know, whether it's the party in power or the different mechanisms in place that keep people from actually stepping down when they can't serve anymore. And this isn't new, right? This is not a new thing with Lindsey Graham dying unexpectedly or Mitch McConnell unable to serve. This
Even
is
people disappearing for like 2 months.
People disappearing. We mentioned Dianne Feinstein. Obviously, Strom Thurmond for a long time was serving when he wasn't physically capable. And, you know, there's been comas, there's been strokes, there's been people who have vanished. But the Senate has never provided, when it's like when its members cannot serve, any requirement for them to actually have to step down in order to replace them, which I think is a huge disservice to the public.
It's absolute stupidity. Why would you not have a process in place? And I know what the flex is, because then they have more power, they can control, they can nuance votes and stuff like that. But it's insane that you have people that, in some cases, that have disappeared, gone off the radar. They don't know where they're at. And they, you know, they play around with it. Oh, we're in contact. Really? First of all, I also remind all the members of Congress that political lying is still lying, and it will be held against you in the court of whatever faith you believe in at some point, if you believe that. I don't get it. Again, it's an example of why some of the stuff is so stupidly managed. The fact that people say things they know aren't true for political reasons. The fact that they allow these situations to happen. People lose their ability to function as a U.S. senator or a member of Congress, and they're still allowed to be on there. For Mitch McConnell, let's focus on him. He's still alive, apparently. What joy does an individual who should probably just rest and recuperate and have a good rest of your life? He's had catatonic moments where he's been in front of the press, he's stopped talking. Whatever that is. He had whatever's happened to him in the last 2 months. And I wish him well, trust me. And he's married, and his wife is Elaine Chao.
Who is also in the picture.
Yes. Yeah.
Back from China.
Good verification. Double verification. You got the paper and her. So that's good. I just don't get it. What is the thing about, in the Dianne Feinstein cases or the Mitch, why are you hanging on to this job? Is it just that power is so all-powerful, corrupting, that you just can't step away from it?
Well,
it can't be the salary. Not for these people, although you can argue the side benefits are worth it.
The
all.
Side benefits, the fact that, you know, you have your entire staff that's just taking care
I
of
guess.
You,
the
whatever other health care benefits that provide. I do think it's the fact that, as we always come back to, whether we want to talk about age limits, whether we want to talk term limits, in this job, whether you're a U.S. congressman, whether you're a U.S. senator, really any elected official, was never designed for it to be your lifelong job.
No.
And because of the incentives, as far as like incumbent incentives, and it is much easier to get reelected if you have already holding the seat, and all of these different things that have led to people serving their entire life, or at least decades, in their seat, despite the fact that it's not really behooving the government. I mean, behooving the public.
Yeah, I'll even put it back on the voter. Shame on you if you put people back that aren't physically or mentally competent enough to serve in that office. That's a pretty important job when you talk about U.S. senator. Shame on you for voting back in.
But again, this goes to the same. If we're criticizing the fact that the Senate has never come up with rules of what to do in these situations, it is the same thing as far as this is the people who have to vote in their own salary raises,
right.
Vote in their own term limits, vote in things that are not necessarily for the people who are currently sitting in those seats.
That's why they don't have
feel like this would be good for the general public, but it's not necessarily good for me, so I'm not going to do anything about it.
Yeah. It's the ultimate, what is it? I don't know if it's a catch-22. It's just like we're in this position where they have to fix it. They don't want to fix it because it's not in their best interest, so it'll never get fixed. That seems nuts to me. In a country as powerful and as important as the United States, fix it. I wish Mitch McConnell all the health because I don't want to see him suffer.
At least he's not running for re-election.
Yeah, thank God. So he's done end of this year, right? End of this year, yeah. I wish him well. Quick break. Hey, while you're thinking about it, thank a weatherman or woman today. Great weekend weather, and you had a busy weekend.
I did have a well, Saturday was preparing for Sunday because it was the
People what you were doing.
The River West Secret Garden Tour was Sunday from 11 to 4, and not that my garden is that secret because I don't have a backyard.
Yeah, you live in a corner.
But I live in a corner, but my garden was one of the 14 stops.
That's nice.
And so we sat outside from 11 to 4 yesterday and talked to people as they were biking or walking through River West. So I met a lot of people, met some listeners. Shout out to Joanne, who just immediately came up and hugged me because she's
Joanne.
I feel like I know you. She listens a lot. Dave listens a lot. And so, yeah, it was really fun. It was fun to meet people. It was fun to talk gardening. I learned some things. I also learned that you have the Picture This app.
Yes.
I paid the $40 for the annual app because I think everyone on that tour had that app as far as being able to take a picture
of
a plant. Not only does it tell you what it is, but it tells you the health of it and what you can do to fix it. And so now I feel like I've actually graduated to real gardener that I've downloaded this app.
So I've seen your River West house yard transform over the last couple of years. What do you think was the motivator for all of that? Like, why did you decide to, I mean, you've really stepped out. You've done some amazing things.
The big thing, so it started, as I said this story many times yesterday. So it started when we first bought this house is my mother's vision. She came there. Debbie Bry. As far as like, we're going to kill the grass. She brought plants. And I would say the first two summers, I wanted it to look good, but it wasn't like an obsession yet. And then something clicked in me last year. And I think the big thing that clicked for me was working in the garden and what it did for my brain as far as, because you can't be on your phone, right? And you can't multitask. You can't try to do, my ability to actually check out and give my brain a rest and just focus on the things that I'm doing as far as digging and planting and where plants should go and picking weeds out. And so I think how good that felt for myself as far as something for me. And then obviously the joy that comes as things are blooming and as it starts to come together. And so that it's really selfish. That's why.
Yeah. I would love to have an Oak Creek garden tour because I spent a lot of time and money trying to get my backyard looking spectacular. So I share your joy. So good job, you. And River West is better for having better gardens and yards. It looks fantastic. Well, break for news.
The work week is here. Let's begin with your Monday market preview with Annex Wealth Management CEO Dave Spano on Point Taken.
Good morning or good afternoon. It's still good morning. It's 11.
Still morning.
It's still the morning. Dave, how are you doing today?
Well, you know, if it's noon somewhere, crack a beer, I guess.
There you go. There's the Dave Spano we all love and appreciate.
Yeah, exactly. We like that attitude. All right. This week, Federal Reserve Chairman Kevin Warsh is set to deliver his first testimony on monetary policy before Congress tomorrow. What are you going to be looking for, listening for come tomorrow?
Yeah, you know, Warsh is in Capitol Hill, and he's talking to the ECB president as well, the European Central Bank president as well. And so, you know, generally he's come out and said he's not going to show his hand, but I would expect that you're not going to see much out of him. You know, he's a supply sider. So those things are really going to tell you that probably is not going to tell much. In fact, the betting odds is that the Fed is not going to make a move in July. So we're going to watch this information. I think more importantly is not what he says, but the actual math, right? Because he said he's going to do it based on data dependency. And later this week, Tuesday and Wednesday, we're going to get a PPI report and a CPI report. That's producer price index and then consumer price index. The consumer price index is expected to decline. In other words, go down by 0.2%. 0.2%.
What does that mean, Dave?
That really means that prices have declined. And where you're really going to get that from, Steve, is from oil prices going from over $100 a barrel into the 60s. And so that is one of the numbers that is figured into the CPI. So if now the way you calculate that, folks, is when you hear someone say it's 0.2 or 0.3 for the month, you multiply that by 12. So if it's 0.3 times 12, that's 3.6% inflation. Now, if it's 0.2 negative, then that's just 1 month because oil prices aren't going to continue to go down. But that would mean that it's starting to slow down. The expectations now that inflation is going to be in the threes for 2026.
What could be a factor or factors that changed that reality that you just spelled out there in the threes and make
well,
it not threes?
We're hearing it. Yeah, geopolitical risk, right?
So, I was just going to say geopolitics is a term you use a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And you can saw what happened this weekend. And the Iranians fired on one of the ships, one of the retail ships, commercial ships going through, and the Navy has been just hammering them. And so that is probably one of those things that could cause oil to go back up, and if oil goes back up, that is a continuum of higher prices. So, I mean, that's certainly one of the things that's going to happen. Of course, you saw what's happening with Russia too. That you know, the Ukrainians are bombing the heck out of the oil tankers as well in the oil supply in Russia. So, a combination of these couple of things could mean that we could see higher oil prices. And as you know, we're in the middle of summer, so that's not a great thing.
Well, and also I saw this the headline this morning from Washington Post that businesses brace for years of inflation as new costs pile up, and saying regardless of what happens tomorrow, even if the inflation shows a little bit of easing, that a lot of businesses are still thinking that this isn't going away and that relief is not going to be long lasting.
Yeah, so I didn't read the article, Kristen, but it was probably related more to the AI spend than it is to energy prices. And so what you're seeing right now, for example, is chip prices, because there's not enough microchips coming out, is that it's pushing up tech prices. So your phone, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, your phone now, I mean, there's some are suggesting that the new Apple iPhone might be $2,000.
Yeah.
So that is going through. And you know, we hear all kinds of stories of AI, and everyone thinks it's just the chip spending, but it's much more than that. It thinks about all of the things that the commercial construction that's happening. You can think about, for example, energy prices going up, the electricity grid, construction. You know, people are selling their farmlands for $20 million. All of this is pushing prices up. So it's not just energy prices in Iran. It is really this tech boom is really going to be really widely felt by a lot of folks.
Dave Spinal, CEO of Annex Wealth Management, joining us as he does every Monday, 11 o'clock hour. He talked about inflation, some of the concerns there, maybe some good news coming this week. We're past the halfway point of the year. Assess the market's performance for 2026.
Yeah, so, well, it's been fantastic, right? I mean, you look at what's really been going on, and here we are halfway through, and earnings season is just crazy. You know, I don't remember too many, if ever, I can't recall back-to-back quarters of 20% earnings growth. And so that's what we had this last quarter. Expectations are it's going to happen again this quarter. And when you see earnings growth, you generally see the market move somewhat in the same direction. And in the past, Steve, what we've had is what's called price-to-earnings expansion. And what that means is, say something was trading at 15 times P.E. ratio, and now it's trading at 20 times P.E. ratio. That means that's called earnings expansion. The company may have not earned anymore, but the price went up. That's not what's happening. People are earning, companies are earning, and it's moving up. The prices are moving up faster than their earnings, so it's really fantastic.
Another segment coming up with Dave Spinal, CEO at Annex Wealth Management. Don't forget their webinar tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., Instant Insight. I love these things. And it's hot topics and the things you need to know right away. Inflation trends, understanding inflation's impact on your savings. We're just talking about that with Dave tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Click the events tab. And then in Brookfield, there's a great one, couples in retirement. I'm in that planning stages. You know, you're talking about things, getting that plan set, because as Dave will always tell you, it's smart to have a plan when it comes to your financial future. Retirement is a major transition. You know this. So July 23rd, 6 to 7, at their headquarters, beautiful headquarters in Brookfield, been there many times. Reserve your spot at annexwealth.com. Just click the events tab. More with Dave Spinal after this on Point Taken. Dave Spinal, CEO at Annex Wealth Management. Great place to start, as always, annexwealth.com for any information that you need about your financial future. All right, so I've been talking to a lot of people, a lot of different things. I was at a baseball tournament for my grandson Max over the weekend, and because people know what I do and they sometimes listen to the show, they ask me about inflation, some of the stuff you talked about. They ask me about, you know, the geopolitics stuff, but they also say to me, energy bills, utility bills, those are showing no sign, Dave, of going down. How big of an impact is that energy piece of all the stuff we talk about, the fact that those bills aren't going down? Gas prices, I guess, are on the way up again, even though we had some relatively abatement of that in the last month. How does that factor into the equation?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that goes back to Kristen's point. I didn't read that Post article, but I'm sure that's what they were talking about, because you think about all the money that's flowing into semiconductors and memory and networking. All of that means there's data centers being built, and so there's power infrastructure that needs to be done. There's cooling systems. There's commercial construction. There's all of these things that have to go into them. You know, you heard about some of these chip companies talking about having their own small nuclear reactors.
Yeah.
But right now that there's going to be grid capacity. I think that's going to be a big story coming down the road, is what is the grid capacity and what's the power going to be available? And it's not, and all of these things are going to be drivers of electrical power. And so, you know, I know that everybody wants to get off of energy, you know, of oil prices, but I think we have to think about another platform. And we talked about this for years, that there's not just one silver bullet. It's not just EV cars. It's a number of things. It is nuclear reactors that are safe. It is oil. It is electricity. Some are even going back. This might shock people, going back to coal. But just having another, and solar and wind, mm-hmm. all of this is going to be part of the answer.
Do you think, I mean, we talked in the first segment about, you know, looking back over the last 6 months. In the next 6 months, this is one of the factors. What else are you looking at that might be one of the driving factors in how the economy and the markets correspondingly perform?
Yeah, so we expect good earnings again next quarter and into 2027. So last quarter was 27% earnings growth, which is a big, big number, folks. The average is around 6, 7, or 8%. This quarter is supposed to be 22%, and it's supposed to be double digits again in 2027. So being in the right areas, in the right sectors in your portfolio is going to be really important. It's not just tech, right? It is energy. It is infrastructure. It is utilities. It's all of these things. It's construction. And so all of this is going to be part of how you build a better portfolio. But the more important thing is there's going to be volatility. I mean, you saw this weekend that, you know, Trump didn't get on that airplane because the Iranians had put him at the top of the list, right? So again, that is risk that you cannot forecast when building a portfolio. We just say this is, it's called event risk. You cannot build a portfolio to event risk. So there's going to be volatility between now and next year. And so you make sure that your portfolio is set up to get through these ups and downs and to make sure it is positioned correctly. That's the most important thing, because we're going to have moves, Steve. That's just the way it's going to be. As long as you and I have been talking, we have been talking about the market climbing a wall of worry. We joked about Dow 50,000 a year and a half ago so, and here we are. So, mm-hmm. you know, and you want to make an even crazier idea here? It's going to go from 50,000 to 100,000. I can't tell you when that's going to happen, but that's a doubling, right, of where we are today. And so, you know, when you went from 25 to 50, it seemed unfathomable.
Can that happen in the next 10 years, Dave?
it could,
well, that's
a doubling.
I do want to ask for both of you, because I think both of you are, neither of you are doomers, right? And we know that as looking at the upside of everything. Unlike, there is a lot of chatter, though. There's a lot of chatter as far as the size of everything, and we're due for a reset and all of these things. And so do you really just chalk all of the people who are naysayers or the people who are doomers as just that, as far as people who are looking for bad news? Or is that argument built on something?
It's built on something. And so for sure what we're going to have is we're going to have a correction.
Okay.
That is just inevitable that we're going to see that. How deep and wide is it? We'll have to see. But what's going to cause a recession or a bear market is a recession. And a recession is based upon negative GDP. There's a possibility, Kristen, that we could get a quarter here, this coming quarter, of nearly 5% GDP growth. And so you have to have negative GDP growth to have a recession. That ties it to a bear market. But to the naysayers, you know, they've been, you know, naysayers have been around for a long time and have been throwing darts at this economy for a long time. And it's proven it doesn't matter if the person's a Republican, a Democratic, or something, or a Democrat, or someone in between. U.S. economy is built on the 300 million people who get up and go to work every day.
If we had a correction, and I'm not cheering for that, of course, because it's bad news, is it going to be tech-related, do you think?
Well, you would think that would be driven by that, I think. But most importantly, you don't know what caused it. I mean, if you look in the past, what have caused recessions, generally debt-fueled. A lot of this spending right now that's happening, especially from these tech companies, is debt-generated. In other words, they're getting debt and then they're investing back into their company. And so if you look back all the way back to the 1920s, that correction, that depression, happened because of too much debt. So I'd say for sure watch the debt prices and watch interest rates. That has always been a key determinant. That's why I talk about it probably ad nauseum to some point, talking about the Federal Reserve and interest rates. But interest rates are determine equity prices, fixed income prices, real estate prices, how people spend. So it's an important piece.
All right, stay cool. You're the coolest guy I know, so I don't really have to say that. But stay cool in this heat wave.
Yeah, hot all week. Yes.
All right, we'll do it again next Monday. Dave Spino, CEO of Annex Wealth Management. Click on the events tab, see the great instant insight, and then one coming up a little bit later in the month. They are always, always worth your time. I've been part of those. Check it out. Dave, we'll see you next week.
All right, see you guys. Bye.
Quick break on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. Thanks, Dave Spino, for hanging around with us. He does every Monday. He's always got great information and great insight into the market conditions, the economy, where we're going, and risk of a correction, according to Dave. That's always possible. Want to talk about the newsletter quickly. So we always encourage people to sign up for our newsletter. It's a great way to sort of catch up on the show. It has links to everything we do on the show, away from the show. And we're just, Chris and I were just talking during the break. Text, by the way, extra, E-X-T-R-A. Make sure that link works there, producer Jazz. And it takes you right to the page. You answer like four questions and you're in. And you get it every Sunday morning in your inbox. We don't bomb you with like nonsense. It's just a really concise, easy to read newsletter. It's fun. We have recommendations that have nothing to do with the show. And we're just teasing each other or talking during the break. And this is a tease. I want to link an interview. And I have a good one coming up tomorrow with a member of the Milwaukee Brewers. We're only going to put that at first only on the newsletter Sunday. It's going to be right there. It's a great interview. I haven't done it yet. I'm doing it tomorrow morning, but I know the player and he's fun. The only way you're going to get that interview, access to it, at least for the first week, is if you subscribe to the newsletter. Right. 855-616-1620. And then we're going to continue to do that because I have some great other interviews, and I'm sure you do too as well, that we're going to provide for our newsletter folks before anyone else gets it.
First access.
Yes.
I love that. Only if you subscribe to Extra Points.
Yeah.
Which you can do by texting extra to 855-616-1620.
And I talk to people, as I said, all out and about, and the ones that subscribe, they love the newsletter. It's fun to read. It's easy to read. I got a great recommendation coming up this Sunday on a show that I discovered on Prime called The Art Detective. Fascinating.
Is it a documentary?
Yeah.
Style show?
Well, sort of like they're like sleuths. They scan the art list of major museums and galleries, mainly in Europe, but across the world now. And they say, that doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem like an accurate description of what that is. And then they investigate it. They restore the painting to art experts. And they use science and the amazing data base that we have around the world. And they find out in some cases, these pictures that were just hanging like in an obscure place are actually like Raphael's or in some cases even higher standard artists than that. It's amazing.
So, and where are they finding them? So they're things that are not currently in museums?
They're in museums, but not like, they're not considered to be like great artworks. They're either misassigned or misaligned to a different artist, or they were like sort of attributed but never verified. They verify them. And they find out some of these things. Like the one yesterday I just finished watching was a Raphael, which is, you know, top, what, three or five in Italian artists. It's good stuff. It's just a funky show.
How'd you come across that?
Because I just go around the internet and look for things to watch that aren't live TV.
What's it like to have that much time?
It's nice. Eventually, you'll know what that's like, and you'll be able to experience as well.
So someday.
We have some fun topics coming up next. I love this idea because you pitched this morning on the outline about some real life, what's the word?
Experience. Exposure.
To see what other people are thinking.
To get out of your own bubble if you're going to be involved in politics.
I love this.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen. He is Steve. And every once in a while, you come across something, you're like, oh, that's a good idea. Mm. At least it's something I could get down with. Because I think, you know, it's not news that a lot of us live in areas that reinforce the ideas that we already have,
bubbles,
right?
Bubbles.
But I mean, there was, I think it was the Great Sort or the Great Sorting, which was came out a couple years back as far as documenting how often people are choosing to live in places that vote like they do, right? And so there's the argument as far as gerrymandering and, you know, using technology and algorithms to draw the lines to include certain types of voters. There's also the fact that we self-select on where we live, often based on politics these
Hello,
days.
Dane County.
And then that leads to you sometimes having a fairly narrow view of how people think. And so I saw this post on X over the weekend. I don't know who this is. Steve Chalet. I don't know if he's anyone besides, because the blue check mark doesn't actually tell you anything anymore. No. But he said, quote, this is in response to the guy who had recruited Graham Plattner as a candidate in Maine, who is apparently this guy is the heir to like a Toys R Us fortune. I didn't know there was a Toys R Us fortune since they have been out of business for a while, but whatever. And basically criticizing him being a working class whisperer when this guy doesn't understand the working class. And so this was the suggestion. Quote, I believe there needs to be an immersion program for activists who live, work, and or went to college in hyper blue safe spaces to spend time in competitive and lean GOP communities where most people didn't go to college, like backpacking across Europe, but for American politics. And I think that is really true. I think about that as for myself. Of as much as I think I have learned to try to be more open-minded, and certainly what I love about being on this station doing this show is the feedback we get from emails and texts on the wide range of political ideologies that listen to our show. And so it gets me out of my own bubble. But if you think about where I've lived, grew up in Madison, I moved to LA, then I went to Berkeley, then I lived in San Francisco, then I lived in Brooklyn, and I lived back in L.A., and now I live in Milwaukee.
None of them are hotbeds of conservatism.
Right? And so, and also with that, most of the people I interact with, whether it was from the jobs that I had or the friend groups that I have, went to college. Right? So there's huge parts and, like, demographics of the United States that are not my main source of what reality is and how people are. And so I think there is something to this as far as someone who's going to be, whether it's a political consultant or heads of working class movements, of actually understanding the people that you are saying you're trying to represent instead of the inevitable limitations on the people you actually know. Because none of us can know 365 million people and what these different cultures and states and movements are like. But I think this, there's something to this as far as having a better pulse, like finger on the pulse of people, than just assuming your friends are like everyone else in the country.
So what do you say to people who go, while they're aligned with, pick a political figure or a party, I just can't have anything to do with them? I have friends who say that, and I have very extreme liberal friends and very extreme conservative friends, the whole gamut, including my family. In my friends group, in my neighbor group, the whole thing, the whole spectrum. I would never ostracize them, remove them based on who they vote for, even some of the crazy things they say.
Is there something you would, like, stop being friends with someone over?
If someone's overtly racist in front of me, I'm probably not going to have a conversation with them.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be one I could think of. Or they physically hurt someone.
Okay.
For no reason. I mean, Those should be everyone's standards.
Well, and even more than that, because I do think there's a difference between being friends with.
You don't have to hang with them.
And this is what I'm saying. As far as there, I think there. Sometimes I think when we talk about civility or relationships within families and friends of differing political views, but there's also the fact of just having the resiliency to be able to handle people who you don't agree with and like be around them instead of immediately disregarding them and having any kind of, like, isolating yourself off from people who disagree with you. But I just think there's something here specifically of the benefits of continuously getting outside of your bubble, especially if you're going to work in politics and work on messaging that resonates with more people than who you think. Because there's basically this came from a conversation of this assumption from certain liberal, I don't want to say liberal elites, but like liberal or left-leaning consultants, strategists, that there's a portion of the working class right-leaning or at least right voting right now that just like if you just could reach them in this one way, like there's some perfect candidate that's going to be able to talk to them, and like a lack of understanding that there's a handful of people who just, not handful, there's a lot of people who are just conservative. Like it is not about finding the right Democratic messenger or candidate, and they're just like misunderstood or they don't know enough yet. It's just like, no, like some people are just actually conservative, yeah. And there is no changing their mind with a certain amount of policies, XYZ thing. And so I think that is the lack of understanding that you like making assumptions about a group of people you've never spent time with.
Yeah, and Texter's asked, doesn't it work the other way around? Yeah, conservatives should spend time with liberals as well. And again, I often point back to the messaging we've received through media over the last few decades. They're evil. We're smarter than you. They're going to destroy our culture and our country. That messaging is played into this.
But what I would push back on as far as the conservatives spending time with liberals, I don't know, and you correct me if I'm wrong, if there is as much of an assumption from the conservative standpoint that there are liberals that you can convert.
I'm not even talking about conversion. I just want listening.
But that's what we're talking about as far as voting, yes. Right? As far as this assumption, I think there is this assumption of, you know, you hear it for a lot on the left, like, oh, these people vote against their own interests. Meaning people who, largely, my assumption, is working class people who vote for Republicans. And so they're voting against, you know, as we've seen, Medicaid and Medicare and different programs that actually help working class and poor people, but largely Republicans want to dismantle them. And so there is this assumption from the left that it's people, if you just educate them enough, then they will vote blue. And I don't know if that same assumption works from the right. It's like, oh, if we just educate this amount of people, they will convert to Republicans.
Yeah, I don't know. Great text from the 414. They're talking about Al McGuire, apparently once said, a paraphrasing, every college graduate should have to be a bartender and a taxi driver for 1 year after graduation, then they'll have a real education. Because you're hearing other viewpoints. I was a bartender for many years, over a decade, a part-time bartender. I met everybody, people I didn't like, and I still had to serve them with a smile and had conversations. And it is a fascinating look, and I would say probably not taxi drivers so much, but Uber drivers or Lyft drivers. I know some of these people very well. They are doing that for a living, and they always talk about the amazing conversations they have with people who they've never met before. Think about that. How many people, this is something we've talked about in our podcast over time, they're in their bubble. They never talk to anyone other than the same 10 people every day of their damn life. How does that give you any perspective on anything? And not to be pigeonholing these people, but they probably look and talk a lot like you. I've said it for years as an elected official and a private sector person, manager. Diversity works. It works in this country, and it's important for a lot of different reasons. And don't get fixated on the appearance part of that. It's the viewpoints, the lived experiences, the family histories, all the uniqueness. That's the cool part. I learned so much from the Sikh community in Oak Creek after a tragedy. It's changed my life in the way, the perspective, the compassion they had at the worst moment and since. That's what you learn from having conversations with people you never expected to have a conversation with. There's a reason why it matters. And I love this idea because it opens us up to different things.
Well, I think I always get pushback when I say this as far as the idea of mandatory service.
Yeah,
of some sort. And I don't mean mandatory service in the military. I mean any kind of mandatory service where you, no matter, similar to what the Al McGuire quote was, it was said, no matter what your background is, you can't pay your way out of it. You can't dodge the draft because you're in college. Like there is something as far as spending a year or maybe 2 years as an American citizen, giving back and serving in some way or another, whether it's AmeriCorps or Teach for America or any of the programs that we could set up as far as you getting outside of your comfort zone and your path and you meet people who are not from where you're from. You meet people who are not necessarily like you, and you actually have to be part of the fabric of the country. And I still think that's a good thing, but I always get pushback as far as why mandatory service is a bad thing.
Yeah, stop with the pushback. Be open to some ideas. We're late for break. We're getting a hook. All right, real quick story, because we've got to go to break again. We talked so much. A person I knew had an opinion of me based on what someone used to say in the media about me. And it was mostly false and stupid, and it's part of a performative thing that radio squawkers do. And then she met me. And her husband was a fan of this radio person. And he goes, oh, that guy's, you know, pick whatever. I'm not going to say the word. And she goes, and she told me this story later. He's not that at all. He's like a nice guy. He's normal. And it just shows you how you can be framed, your opinion of something, or someone can be framed by someone else's opinion who maybe has a lot of pull in your market or in your universe or your sphere of influence. I think make your own decisions about people. You know, I've stopped. I think my wife Kathy put me on this path. I stopped saying the word hate so much because I kind of got out of hand with it. Unless you're Hitler, I'm not probably going to hate you, right? Or someone at that level, right? I'm not going to throw it around as easily as that's the message. I'm not going to throw the word around as easily as I used to. I'm
trying to think if there's anyone I actually
hate. Yeah.
What is it? Like, what's the litmus test of hate?
Just
wish bad things upon.
Yeah. Well, what do you mean on the person? Yeah. I guess. I mean, but they have to deserve the term hate. Just because you don't like something, I don't think you need to go all the way to the hate level. There's a lot of hate. We have enough hates. We see it played out mostly by men in leadership positions around the world, and we have since, you know, we've taken over the planet. So we probably have enough of that. Let's sort of, you know, backfill some like more normalized way that we deal with each other. That's my words of wisdom on this Monday. I think I'm on my game today.
You are on your game today.
Yeah. I'm bringing the energy.
More so than me.
What do you think? Is the sun?
I think I'm a little wiped out from the sun.
You're wiped out. And I'm supercharged.
And a lot of conversations.
Yeah, you had the 5 hours.
You isolated this weekend.
I did isolate, yeah, which is very therapeutic. You know, good. My screen time on Sunday was 5 minutes.
Wow.
I love that.
Good
yeah.
for you.
That's a good Sunday. It's the step away. We had this argument. We had a dinner. I know we're late to break again. We had a dinner. Six of us ate dinner outside last night on my patio. And I did the screen time test on them.
I'm sure they all loved it.
They did.
Oh.
Because they learned something about themselves. You don't understand what you do.
Were they surprised?
They weren't. None of them were bad.
Okay.
But it's sort of a healing way to understand that maybe you don't need as much internet time or technology as you think you do. Don't doom scroll. Be more positive.
Okay.
That's my message for Monday.
All right.
My Monday positive message from Steve. Quick break. Texter asked, but do people vote with their heart or their pocketbook? Do you think?
Most pocketbook. People. Well,
that's an interesting question.
I would say, on the whole, probably pocketbook.
I would think that would be the case.
There's some people who vote with their heart.
Like, what would that... So, flesh that out for me.
I would say I probably vote with my heart more than my pocketbook.
Do you look at... Like, when you flesh out a candidate, obviously their policies matter, but, like, what's the other factors that you, like, really... Like, how they communicate?
Leadership and integrity.
That's good ones. Yeah, but most of them don't have that.
Well...
Yeah, so then what do you do next? I look for honesty. Don't say, like, if they say something I know is not true, I can't, you know. It's my biggest beef with Tom Tiffany. You keep talking about election stuff, and I know that he's cited, but here's the reality for all Republicans. Donald Trump didn't win in 2020. I'm sorry if that hurts your feelings or it makes you mad or it's caused you much heartache in your life. He didn't win in 2020. He won in 2024 quite convincingly. Celebrate that, right? That was a big win. He got his revenge. He's the president. We respect that. He's the president of the United States. He has powers and rights and privilege of the office, the higher office. Deal with that reality. Stop going back what is now 6+ years. It's stupid. That's for you, Tom Tiffany, even though I like you. Stop mentioning that to appease a certain group of voters. That's my message.
That's where you wanted to end today?
That's my Tom Tiffany message.
Okay.
And
well,
come on the show once the primaries are done. Yes.
All right. We'll be back tomorrow.
Yes.
With more wisdom from Steve.
Talking Tuesday. And Kristen. And more energy.
More energy, probably.
News is next.